Okay.
Many people go to pesantren. I actually went to one during my junior high school. Mm-hmm. So it's basically maybe during my 7th grade to 9th grade. Mm-hmm. I go to quite modern pesantren. And many people like to go to pesantren because it's not only give religious education to the children, but it's really save the parent times because the children live there, everything is there. And many pesantren, especially the traditional one, is actually very accessible economically. So it's kind of like for economic choice, pesantren is also giving good education with kind of cheaper price rather than other school.
What portion of their time is spent in religious instruction, mm-hmm. and what in everything else?
It depends. In modern pesantren, I think maybe 60% of the curriculum is for religious education, but 40% is like for math, English, physics, because we still have to pass the national exam, and it basically just like regular school.
The reason I ask is that the New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman has criticized, I think, more in the Middle East than in Indonesia, mm-hmm. these schools, because he thinks they're not equipping students mm-hmm. with the employment skills that they need.
Yeah.
Math,
science, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like in the past, pesantren focusing on making student being teacher of religion or being preacher, basically like religious clerics too. But in the past, I'm talking about like centuries ago, actually the students have to sometimes build their own dormitory together and plant some of the food, vegetable that they will eat. It's not like that anymore. So basically they know how the survival skill for daily life. But now actually some pesantren also kind of like train the student like management, so they will manage or like kind of like intern of some of the pesantren business, because some of the pesantren have their business in farming, or if pesantren is nearby coastal area, sometimes the owner is also like owning some, I don't know, like fishing market or something, and sometimes the students will be so involved in that, so in a way that they're not detached from daily life and how to survive as a citizen or like as human being, basically. So not only study and sit in the mosque, like, yeah, all day long.
This is really ignorant question, but what's the national language of Indonesia?
Bahasa Indonesia. So it's rooted in Malay language, but it's totally different than English. It's Indo-Australian language, people
okay.
say.
Okay.
Yeah.
And following up on that, so English is taught pretty much from the first grade on up? Or
yeah, but what happened is, like when I show you Indonesian map, is the standard of English that taught in Indonesia will be so different. I mean, some people never hear any native speaker. They will just learn English from the book. So, and some people, even though English is actually compulsory for at least high school student, but maybe we only learn English about like, I don't know, 3 hours a week. So we don't really expose to English as much as Malaysia, I will say, because Malaysia was colonized by British and people use English more and more. And the Philippines is also using English as their educational language, like, but not in Indonesia.
So the British never colonized Indonesia?
No, it's only Dutch and Portuguese.
Okay, yeah. So then the Church of Protestant churches are probably Dutch Reformed rather than Anglican.
Yeah.
You didn't mention how much math and science is taught in the school.
It's about 40%, like math, science, biology, and other. It's like, they still have, it's basically rather than reducing, maybe they reduce kind of maybe 20% of the requirement, like national requirement on how long math and science have to be taught, but they really have to equip the student, because student like me, I want to go to secular school too, I want to go to university, I need to know other things rather than religious thing. So most of the modern pesantren, they will really, really teach student math and everything, but student will have like additional hours to learn about religion in the class. Mm-hmm. But
and
because
they're all day, so they're studying.
Yeah, and sometimes outside the class too.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So when you left there and went to a public school for high school?
I go to Islamic school, but it's like more like they talk more about the secular education too. So it's like it's not like because there's like if you go to Pesantren and Islamic school, there's like variety of the degree. How many percent is the Islamic education, and how good is the school in terms of the other education? Because some Islamic school will be so competitive in science, some will be competitive in religious education. Mm-hmm. I mean, every school has their own strength, so it's really kind of like up to the students or the parents what kind of school that will meet their needs.
Does this include your public schools, or are they the same way as the Muslim schools? Or?
The public school, most of the public schools sometimes is very competitive, even more competitive than private school there. The good public school, basically, it depends. Some of them, they have like kind of like additional religious education, but it will be usually the students organize themselves. We still teach Islam in public school, Christianity, Hinduism, and everything. But the religious education in public school is like maybe 2 hours, 3 hours a week. And then the Christian student will go to the Christian education, Muslim student go to Islam education. So they don't share the same class. They don't study together. Even though now, I think people who love interfaith dialogue like me and some of my friends saying that they should learn about each other religion too, because we see them like daily, but we don't really, sometimes we don't really know what's going on there. I mean, if you're curious enough and open-minded enough, you can sometimes go to the church and everything, but not all people will be, you know, comfortable or even curious to go there, even though they're actually curious, but they think that, oh, maybe we cannot go there or something. Yeah.
So, I mean, what percentage of the people who attend the most Islamic schools end up going to universities afterwards?
Indonesia has like 100 Islamic university too, so most of them also will go to Islamic University, and now the Islamic University start to have science department, so they have biology, physics, and other. Before, they only have kind of religious studies and humanities, so they have and some social science. They maybe have like Islamic economy, communications, but they don't have biology, physics department. But now, starting 5 years ago, many Islamic universities also opening the department on this area.
Does that include computer science?
Yes, in computer science. And I think like most of the pesantren is actually really focus or emphasize computer science a lot for the students, because many of the students really want to go abroad, either to Al-Azhar University in Egypt or to other university, and they really want to expose students with this kind of international communications and technology. So I would say that technology is actually maybe part that more developed rather than maybe biology or other science.
Muslims, I mean, it seems fitting that they would, you know, emphasize science and math, because while Europe was Islam, advanced math and science like in the Middle Ages, when Europe was, you know, pretty much under the rule of the Catholic Church, which wouldn't...
Yeah, you cannot do.
World is flat and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As a woman in the Islamic religion, do you feel limited in any way? I mean, you obviously won a Fulbright, you're here at the United States, and, you know, you're obviously very bright. But have you been limited in anything as a woman through the years?
I think it's not on... Yeah. I think like pretty much we still live in patriarchal world. So I think in terms of sometimes I feel limited, yes. But I think like when I see the struggle of every professional educated woman, I think sometimes the funny things, I feel limited to look bright sometimes. You cannot look so bright. You cannot outspoken too much. Even in outside Indonesia, we kind of like trained to be a woman, you have to be outspoken but also humble. So I think like you have to be you can be like strong and brave, but you have to somehow still keep your body language kind of respectful to other, while men can be like freer. Yeah, so I think like it's kind of like sometimes more culture to me rather than religion. And actually in Indonesia, the interesting thing is many of female religious activists is actually becoming very, very outspoken. And I think they feel like even though they wear hijab and everything, they actually defending of the right of women to not wear hijab, because some district that have Muslim majority population do want to recommend their workers and students, Muslim students, to wear hijab every day, and many of women activists in Indonesia, Muslim women activists, actually opposing that. Mm-hmm. Because even though we believe in the value of modesty, but we really want it to be woman choice, right. Not role, right. Like, yeah, not government pressure. Yeah.
Well, how has it been for you being here in the U.S. as a Muslim woman who wears the hijab and people know right off you're a Muslim?
But sometimes they still ask me. Because I think like I have like different type of hijab style. Mm-hmm. And some of it is like very simple. When I actually in the Philippines, they think I'm a sister. Oh. Yeah, and the sister also, like, even the Catholic sister keeps saying that, sister, I'm sorry, like, because you look like a sister. here, I think in the university, I will say that people used to it, but maybe outside the university, people kind of like, I don't know if sometimes like people just have bad mood. It's very rare, but sometimes I feel like they do see me, maybe they think I'm kind of, I don't know, like migrants that come here without knowing the language or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's only happened to me like one time that I feel kind of, oh, this lady doesn't really, really treat me well, but I actually say to her that I don't think you're supposed to talk to me like that. Yeah, and I say that I'm student in Emory, and it's something that I don't really want to talk, but then it seems that she kind of like talked to me in not in a nice way, and I'm just saying that I feel, yeah, it's not really right way to say it. Yeah, to talk to me.
So you told her?
Yes, yeah, because I
called her on it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think like I have to stood up for myself too, sure. And yeah. But it's very rare, because like most of the time people really, really just embrace me as human being, and most of the time I actually forget that I wear a veil, because it's like part of my life. Yeah. And I don't really think, even to see Muslim woman, I don't really caught in my head that, is she wearing veil, is she not wearing veil? I mean, mm-hmm. I usually just say, oh, you look nice today, or I just, in my mind, I kind of like categorize people with characteristic rather than with their clothes. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I also forget that, yes, I'm really, really going around with this Islamic symbol in my head. I mean, it's very rare I'm thinking like that for myself. Yeah.
I was wondering, in the film, it was interesting about boys and girls mm-hmm. being separated. Mm-hmm. Is that universal, and is it under debate in mm-hmm. sort of liberal Islamic circles, or is it not mm-hmm. subject to debate?
For the Islamic boarding school, I think most of the time they actually agree. Because if it's not separated, the parents will not let the students go to the boarding school. They can be so crazy, I think, partying or acting. But in the university, there's no separation. So it's only during high school. And I think it's also just in terms of like management, they really want to not, because they're taking care of other people's children, basically. They want to make sure that there is nothing bad happening. Yeah. So it's like it's easier to control. But even in the pesantren, usually we have club, like debating club or Quranic recitation club that basically some of the club or the scout club too, the female students and the male students will mix only in that club activities, mm-hmm. but then not in the dormitory. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Did someone else over here? I noticed that when they were in the service, or I don't know what you call it, in the mosque, I just noticed the men, because they were closer, but they did not put their heads on the floor. Is that a difference in the way the Middle East?
They put the head on the floor the movie doesn't. Yeah. Maybe. Yes, yeah.
I just wondered, because the reason I bring that up is that I was told by someone at the 14th Street, I guess you got Masjid, that the reason that the women, because some people have said, why are the women in the back and so forth, but they said if the women are in the front putting their heads to the floor, it's kind of a situation where if the men were behind them, it's an awkward situation. Mm-hmm. That's what, I don't know if that's... if you've ever heard that or not.
I heard that a lot, but I don't have male mind, so I don't know if it's true or not. because it's kind of like, maybe you can tell and be like, oh yeah, Sarah's like quite liberal, but I think like it's kind of like stupid. Yeah, accusations. Like if it make woman, because I know that there's like a lot of debate. Amina Wadud, one of the professor in the US, that also visiting professor in my institutions, she led Jum'ah prayer, I think in New York, I believe, and many Muslim ulama, male ulama, saying that, debating it, criticizing it, that woman not supposed to leading prayer, and one of the argument is like what just you said, but I think like now, most of the women will not buy it. Most of the educated Muslim women will not buy it, and in terms of separating the mosque, it's not always woman in the back, but sometimes it's like side by side, and there's like trail there. I'm sure that many, I'm not saying that all Muslim men will agree with me or Muslim women will agree with me, but I think a great number of Muslim women not really actually agree with that kind of argument and rationally. Yeah, and then we have to put the woman in the back.
There was a time when in church, like the early church, women and men separated where they sat.
Yes.
So.
Only a lot of Christians who don't want women leading in worship.
Right.
And, it's that kind of thing going on in Christianity.
Yeah, and interestingly, the Quran actually never really say that woman cannot lead prayer. I mean, but there is like some verses in Quran that saying that man is the leader. But they don't say about prayer. Then it's kind of like also the the interpretation can be differed too, because the word, the Arabic word that they use as leader, is actually used as protector. And the first is actually saying that the man is a protector or leader of woman, because they have more, they gain more than woman. So they kind of like a bread seeker, not the woman. So it's kind of like sociological condition. And many people say that, oh, so if the woman actually has capacity, she can be a leader. But this is like different interpretation within Islam.
Patriarchal society, once it came, just like...
Although
I've heard that Mohammed was actually very, in his time, this is what I heard, that he was very pro-woman. I mean, that it was a very, I don't know that it was, maybe it was patriarchal, but he himself was a very pro-female.
Yes, he's very progressive and pro-female, and in several hadiths, or the history recording, even Fatima, his daughter, like make a speech in the mosque. So, and there, that's in the debate of can woman leading prayer or not. We have the story, the Muslim scholar usually cite the history that mentioned that there is a woman slave who actually led the prayer in her family, because she's the one who convert to Islam the earliest, so she knows about Islam more than her husband, so she led the prayer. The Prophet Muhammad, he also really tried to change the patriarchal society in a way, like before, woman in the Arab community in Mecca is actually part of the inheritance, woman considered as a goods. So you not only inherit like wealth from your dad, but you inherit his wife too. But in the prophet period, he actually changed the law to make they're not part of inheritance, and they're entitled to have some of inheritance. Even though now people don't really see it and see that why woman only get half of the inheritance and half as much as the men, but then actually it's already a progress. And some ulama, some kind of pre-progressive scholar say that it's because the prophet have the spirit of progress and equality, we should keep that spirit, not only stuck in that deficient stuff, inheritance.
And I have to say, we may need some last questions. And
Does the Quran say they have to wear, are they doing it for religious reasons or just?
The black hat is more about, I think it's Indonesian tradition. So it's like Indonesian Islamic traditions. Yeah. And the Quran doesn't really say things about men wearing hat. Yeah. But I think most of Muslim men usually like to adorn their head with hat. Yeah.
Have you been surprised at the social customs here in the United States and the colleges with the young people? Or how has that affected you with your background?
I think I watch too much Hollywood movie. So what surprised me is actually like, wow, Hollywood movie is too liberal. Not all youth in America is actually like them. And before I stay in Atlanta, I actually studied in Miami for 1 year. And I think it's also what surprised me the most is, I think Hollywood movie also make us think U.S. as monolithic. But you see Miami and Atlanta, even though it's like the states next to each other, they are so different. The demography is different, and people speak differently, people dress differently too. So yeah, I think maybe that's what surprised me is also the diversity within the U.S.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.